Hey guys, my name is Sabir Bharti. A very warm welcome to another episode of the Sabir Bharti Show, the place where I interview interesting people with interesting perspectives. My guest today is Deneen Vigiano. That's spelt DINNEEN. Vigiano, spelt VIGGIANO. Following a significant period of suffering from debilitating back pain, including degenerative disc disease, herniations, fractures, modic changes, and scoliosis, Deneen Vigiano found herself not satisfied with recovery solutions being offered by the traditional back pain industry. Deneen took on a more holistic approach, combining nutrition and body movement, amongst other things, in her attempt towards recovery, and says that she is now very much active and pain-free. Today, through her Retrain Back Pain program, Deneen aims to educate others on back pain recovery methods. You can follow Deneen Vigiano's work on her Instagram page using the handle at Retrain Back Pain and her website, which is retrainbackpain.com. I will also include all of Deneen Vigiano's other social media links in both the YouTube and audio podcast episode descriptions, including a short free video workshop which Deneen has put together, which provides you with guidance of what to do if you are experiencing back pain flare-up. So let's get this show on the road and welcome our special guest. Hello, Deneen Vigiano.
Hi, Sabir. I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today. I really appreciate it. This is actually a subject that really excites me because I've been so through something very personal in relation to back pain, which I'm sure we can discuss a bit later on. But I'd like to start by actually rolling back the years because prior to venturing into what you do today, you worked on Wall Street for around 10 years, I believe. So what I wanted to ask was, what are your memories from the corporate world?
Oh, it was a lot of fun, actually. It was sort of the heyday of the 90s in at Wall Street in New York City, and I was traveling internationally. And so, my big memories were a lot of sitting, right? As it pertains to my work now, is a lot of sitting. And I thought it was really exciting. The work that I was doing required that I had several screens in front of me, and I worked on one of those big trading floors, and I thought it was really just thrilling to be in contact with that kind of news flow and information about so many different sectors and industries. I really liked being knowledgeable and being up on all the current events from textiles to tobacco to oil drilling to, medical devices to semiconductors. So it was really fun for me when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not in it anymore, is the conclusion of that story.
No, of course, you seem to be really enjoying what you're doing today. And I believe in the early 2000s, you began to suffer with back pain yourself. And there was a particular moment of profound realization for you when you received a medical image of your back pain. Could you perhaps shed some more light on this episode and what happened?
Yeah, so I, at that point, I'd made the transition from that Wall Street career into teaching yoga and then into teaching some more anatomy and injury management. I got a little bit more involved in sort of the academic side of what's really happening in the body and the breath. And around that same period, both my parents had died, and I had a young son. And so that's sort of what correlated to the back pain. And as a movement professional, I really felt like I should be able to fix myself. So I kept trying to fix myself, mostly through yoga and stretching, a lot of stretching. And it really wasn't getting any better. So at some point, I decided, well, let me get the medical images. Once I have the medical images, I'll get a diagnosis. Once I have a diagnosis, I'll get treatment. Once I get treatment, I won't have any pain. That's sort of the way I thought it worked. And I was seeing one practitioner here in New York City, and he asked me to bring in my MRI. And I brought in my MRI, and I was already on his table with my face, in the face cradle. So I was facing down, and there was this plain gray ugly carpet below my face, and I could hear him like rustling my images on his light screen in his office. And then I just heard him sort of let out this deep groan. Arr. I thought, oh, that's not good. And then he leaned over me. He came pretty close to my head and he said, "This is very, very bad. You will not teach again." And I mean, the tears just fell out of my eyes and made this loud, like, plop sound on the carpet below my face. That was one of the biggest turning points in my journey, actually, because I realized through that moment and several other moments like it that every time I went to see a spine specialist of various disciplines in New York, their business is really focused on a lot of what's called nociceptive languaging. So, a lot of telling you what's wrong with you. And it's around the diagnosis and then around what they think caused it or what they think your prognosis is. And it just seemed like everybody was in the business of telling you how broken you were. And it was really hard for me to get proactive, empowering things that I could do for myself. So I was starting to get like overwhelmed with, just kind of beat over the head with how horrible my back was. And you mentioned a couple of things that were going on in my spine, but I also was diagnosed at that time with something called spondylolisthesis and also stenosis. And those two things are highly correlated to surgical interventions. And a lot of people in the general population think that if they have advanced stenosis or a spondylolisthesis diagnosis, that they are destined for surgery. And so that's, I was getting a lot of that sort of talking to based on my x-rays and MRIs. And the other thing that happened, Sabir, that's worth noting is that, you know, when you go for an image at a particular location, there is a particular radiologist who is going to read that particular picture. And everyone is going to read it a little differently. And just because you get a radiology report on your image, it doesn't mean they report everything that's going on in your spine, either because the image isn't good enough to reveal everything, or sometimes, as was my case, the radiologist just reported some of like the obvious big things like herniations and the spondylolisthesis. But there were a couple of other very significant things happening in my spine that were not on the radiology report that were, in fact, the drivers of my pain. So, what ended up happening was my doctors and clinicians, most of them don't even look at the images, they just look at the report. And then they ended up chasing the spondy and the herniations as my primary drivers of pain. And that wasn't actually what was driving my pain. What was driving my pain wasn't reported on the report, and that was these modic inflammatory changes within the body of my spinal bones, and some very significant sacroiliac joint compression, which was obvious, but just wasn't reported because it wasn't being asked for, I guess.
Right. And as I mentioned, when I was asking the question, that was quite a pivotal moment for you, which essentially made you decide for yourself that you want to take matters into your own hands. And closely linked to that, I wanted to just ask you about the emotions that you were going through at the time. And because you describe emotions of people suffering from back pain as often being confusion, overwhelm, and worry. And I was wondering if you yourself experience such emotions. If so, could you just give us a flavor of what you were going through in terms of emotions?
You know, it's funny because as you're asking me about my experience, my emotional experience, I can feel those emotions bubbling back up within me.
Right.
Yeah. So worry and confusion would be the best of the emotions. That would really be sugarcoating it. And anybody that's listening who's had back pain for a while is like, I wish I was just confused and worried. What ends up happening when you have pain for longer than 3 months is you end up feeling a little helpless, a little hopeless. You start doing, or I started doing, fewer and fewer things that I enjoyed and that I was used to doing. I mean, I was really active. I used to ride my bike. I used to play soccer. I used to do yoga. I used to lift weights. I used to go snowboarding. I had a small kid. I used to pick him up and play with him. There were a million things that I was sort of drawing away from because I didn't know what was causing my pain. I didn't want to make it worse. I was afraid to move. It seemed like everything was making my back upset. And so, in addition to the confusion and worry, there's anger. There's a lot of guilt about what did I do? What am I doing wrong? Why can't I figure this out? Fear. Oh my goodness, so much fear. When I decided to create the back retrain back pain program, I would say the driving motivator was fear of disability, fear of becoming permanently disabled and never being able to do the things that I want to do again. And I sort of realized that if I keep following the traditional path, I'm going to be disabled. It's not working. I keep trying all the things that aren't working, and doing more of the things that aren't working doesn't make them work any better.
Sure. Well, I'm so glad that you came to this realization. And as I mentioned in the introduction, you're now at a period of your life where you say that you're pain-free. How does that feel now to be on a path of full recovery and being able to decide for yourself what to do and how to manage what you had?
I mean, it's amazing to be pain-free, and it's also a little heartbreaking because I'm in contact with people who are still getting those messages that they'll never be able to walk again, and you have the spine of an 80-year-old, and there's just so many conflicting messages out there for the people that I talk to and work with that it is a little heartbreaking, but I'm really proud of myself. I mean, I feel like I'm sitting on a little pot of gold, like I've figured out what works, and I just want to share it with everyone because the reason I have no pain is because I do the work that I teach other people, and it works. It's a constant, ongoing plan of maintenance, but it works.
Sure. Yeah. And just a quick reminder to everybody who's watching and listening. Deneen Vigiano did just mention the Retrain Back Pain, and the website is, of course, retrainbackpain.com, where you can find out a lot more information about what Deneen has to offer. Deneen, I want to just switch gears and discuss a wonderful analogy that you shared with me off air a few days ago, where you liken the way you work today with a beautiful relationship that you had with a waterway close to where you lived as a child. And in particular, it was an observation that you made about the waterway. Can you elaborate on this story for us?
Yeah. So when I was little, when I was, 6 to I guess 10 years old, the home that we lived in was right against some woods. And so every day after school, I couldn't wait to get home from school. I'd put on my play clothes and I'd run out into the woods and play in the woods. And one of the things that I was most engaged by when I went out into the woods was we had this little creek that would run through the woods back there. And in the spring, after all the leaves, dead leaves were on the creek, and the water might have been a little low or a little high, it doesn't really matter, but you could tell that there's places in the creek that weren't flowing well. And I would go back in the creek and I'd find a long stick and I'd flip out all the dead leaves and move some rocks and restore the flow of the creek in my backyard. By the way, I'm really sorry. Can you hear all the sirens in the background?
I can slightly, but it's okay. It's not drowning out your voice in any way, so don't worry. It's
Okay.
okay.
It was quiet
Yeah.
all morning and then suddenly it started up as soon
It's
as we turned
okay.
on.
No worries.
Yeah, so that's it's sort of very analogous to the work that I'm doing now, which is that I help people restore flow. And part of that is just like grabbing a stick and moving the leaves and the rocks. I mean, it's kind of an easy solution. But if nobody goes back there and does it, then the creek's gonna dry up, it's gonna stagnate, and it's just gonna stop flowing. And our life is very much like that, right? So there's lots of things that are happening when we're in pain that are damming up the flow, that are sort of impeding our healing. And one of the first things I do with my retrain back pain clients is a practice called removing aggravants. And it's like removing leaves from the creek. It's finding out what are those things that we're doing on a daily basis that are just recreating or cultivating the pain triggers, and how can we remove those aggravants so that our body has more capacity and more ability to heal.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for sharing that story. I was really moved when you described that to me when we were speaking a few days ago, and I was so eager to discuss it on the show. So thank you so much. I have two questions next, if that's okay. Kind of two questions roll into one. I'd like to talk a little about what you describe as a poor spine hygiene. So firstly, could you perhaps help us break down what you mean by this? And secondly, you also believe that adding bad exercises to a poor spine hygiene is unproductive. I'd love for you to expand on this too, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, those are great questions. Thank you so much for asking them. I mean, the concept of spine hygiene isn't really something that we're taught or we think about, or you hear that term very often. We hear about oral hygiene, right? And you know what your oral hygiene is. You know that you're supposed to brush your teeth and you're supposed to floss and you may use mouthwash. You go see your dentist periodically. Because your mouth is important, and we understand that, and we've been taught that. But nobody is really talking or teaching us about spine hygiene. And spine hygiene is the same concept. There are things that we can all be doing for our spines that helps us keep a good environment for our spine. It helps keep the muscles limber, it keeps the joints mobile, it keeps us strong, keeps us healthy. And just like oral hygiene, spine hygiene requires a little some daily attention. So that's the idea of spine hygiene and some examples of poor spine hygiene. I mean, if you're listening or watching at home, you know what some of your poor spine hygiene habits are already. When you talk to me, they've blown up into relief, and we know exactly what they are for sure. But most people that I work with have a pretty good idea that they're sitting too much. Or that their workout might not really be appropriate for what's going on in their spine right now, or their pain triggers right now, right? So we kind of have an idea what's poor spine hygiene is. And posture is related to that, right? Our relationship to gravity has a profound impact on your intervertebral discs and how your spinal bones stack and how you move. And so without sort of looking at and understanding what your relationship to gravity is posturally, let's say this is your spine, and you tend to stand a little sway back. You tend to push your hips forward when you stand. Have you seen people that do that? Often tall people will do this to make themselves a little shorter. So whether it's this or whether it's a slouching of the shoulders, if you're training on top of that postural habit, you're getting stronger, but you're training the dysfunction. You're just reinforcing something that's already not serving you well. So those two things, spine hygiene and training the dysfunction, it's just a good idea to get the awareness of what your postural habits are. And we do that in a one-to-one assessment in Retrain Back Pain. And then once you're aware of your postural habits, before you go into a plank or before you start doing other exercises, you can sort of self-correct so that you're in a better position upon which you want to build your strength.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And it's funny, as you were speaking there, it reminded me of my younger years. Whenever we used to sit at home, me and my brothers, on the chairs, whether it's having breakfast or dinner or wherever we were in the house, if we weren't sitting correctly, our mother always used to come behind us and give us a little poke on our back, and we knew that was a sign for us to sit straight. And I remember as young children, we used to get annoyed that mum used to keep doing this to us. But it was only later on, when we started realizing the importance of sitting straight and, as you said, why it's important. It's only now that we appreciate things that our mother used to do for us in that regard. So it makes absolutely complete sense. And as you were talking, I was also thinking of my own daily habits. You were speaking a little about people sitting on chairs for the whole day, and I tend to sit exactly where I am for the majority of the day. But I find if in a day I'm not actively going out and walking or having a workout in the gym, I do start feeling little niggles in the body. And that's not just in the back, but also sometimes my knee. I have a bad right knee. And I find even daily exercise, even for a short period, goes a very long way in in avoiding these little niggles. So these daily walks, exercises, is that something that's, I guess, incorporated in the work that you teach within Retrain Back Pain?
Yeah, there's a bunch of things in there that I just want to comment on. A, I love that story about your mom. Thank you for sharing.
No
B,
worries.
sitting up straight for a lot of people actually is part of their dysfunctions. So some people are really sitting up too straight and overusing those muscles. So some of my clients, their homework is actually to slouch a little bit because they're overusing their spinal erectors, which is kind of funny. And then the other thing is, sitting in a chair. You know, if you're sitting in a chair for 8 or 10 hours, going for a workout at 5 o'clock or going for a walk, that's not enough. Basically,
Right.
you shouldn't be sitting in a chair for 8 hours. You can get some boxes, put them up on your desk, and make a standing desk. I just had my foot, I've got a stool, I'm at a standing desk, I've got a stool under me, I've got one foot up on a stool. Switching positions and changing, even if you're sitting, changing your sitting position or getting up and putting one knee on your chair or walk around your apartment, doing some overhead stretches or hangs. All of those things interspersed within your 8 hour day and seeing if you can get, I would advise actually seeing if you can get, 15 minutes, try out standing. Using a box on your desk and put your laptop up on a box and then grow that 15 minutes. Maybe do 2 15-minute segments in tomorrow's work day and just start to find other places that you can work that are going to help you to change positions because just like the creek, you're stagnating if you're sitting in a chair and then going out for one burst of exercise will not undo those 8 hours of. So here the statistic is. For every half hour that you're sitting, the compressive force on your intervertebral discs lowers your disc space by like a 16th of an inch. So just in a half an hour of sitting, you're already getting some like gravitational compression on your intervertebral discs. So one would argue that a half an hour is already too long to be sitting in one straight shot, so you definitely want to break those up.
Wow. I mean, that really puts things into perspective. And I mean, from what you say, my habits are completely wrong then, because I can often find myself sitting in this position exactly where I am right now for at least 3 4 hours sometimes, sometimes five. Of course, in between, I'll get up and make lunch and do other chores. But there can be days where I'm not physically leaving the house to exercise or to do any great movement until later on in the evening. But yeah, I like the idea about changing it up and using maybe a footstool. Yeah, no, definitely food for thought. Thank you so much. In the introduction, I mentioned, Deneen, about the holistic approach that you've taken with back pain recovery, which does include, of course, body movement and eating well as well. So I wanted to come on to nutrition. As I said, it's an area that you find is vital in back pain recovery. And you also mentioned when we were speaking off air that you're someone who loves preparing good, healthy, nutritious food. Now, I'm at a stage at the moment actually where I'm looking to change up my own food habits, in the sense that a lot of my dishes are quite boring and bland because I don't like spending much time in the kitchen. I'm a 15 kind of 20 minute kind of guy when it comes to dishes. I always want things to be fast. However, as I said, I do want to start being a bit more elaborate with my cooking skills. So, going slightly off topic, my question to you would be, do you have a favorite go-to dish that you absolutely love? If so, what is that? And could you give me any personal tips on particular dishes that you'd recommend?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question. What I would do if we were, oops, if we were working together is that I would ask you, what are you already cooking? And
Right.
then we would just make those meals a little bit better. Because you already
Okay.
have, you know, you don't have to recreate the wheel because you're already doing these things. So how could we embellish what you've already got in your back pocket? Sorry, my stool's
No
not.
worries.
So, you know, one of my favorite go-tos is I really like some roasted salmon with maybe some roasted potatoes and some broccoli is a, you know, that's a 15 minute meal. It's pretty easy. You can do it all in one pan.
Yeah.
So that's a good one. And then I've got an Instant Pot, which I really like a lot because you can throw everything in the morning when you make breakfast and it can start itself and be done for dinner. And it's just one pot to clean up. So you can make lots of things in the Instant Pot and basically just clean out your refrigerator. If you're a meat eater, you can stew some meat and throw some vegetables and some garlic and some onion in there. I really love beans and greens and Moroccan chickpea stew are some of my favorites that I love to make and I make with great frequency. And I'm Italian, so there's a lot of Italian meals in there that we do as well.
Yeah, no, I did guess that you did have some Italian roots from your surname. But no, thank you for sharing it. And yeah, I do need to kind of up my game because I'm actually getting quite bored with the food that I'm eating. And I tend to eat pretty much the same food week in, week out. I have like two or three dishes that I just mix between. But yeah, and certainly getting more kind of veggies and fruit into my diet is something I've been working on in the last few months. I'm guessing fruit and vegetables play a big part in things like back pain recovery, right?
Yeah, I mean, just to rewind a little bit, I
Yeah,
just want
sure.
to say for people that are watching that the Retrain Back Pain program, it's not just nutrition and movement. It's actually a whole multidisciplinary approach that involves learning about how pain operates in your body and mindset and stress reduction and breathing and therapeutic rollouts. And you know, I pull from a ton of different modalities to create this nice holistic interdisciplinary program. And nutrition is a part of it because I happen to be a nutrition counselor. And yeah, so the short story on how nutrition plays a role, you know, when we have back pain, most people are like, oh, I have a herniation in my back. How can you fix the herniation in my back? And it's very mechanistic, and it's very sort of spot treatment focused. But that's not how back pain works in the body. And so my approach is really very functional, very integrated, very whole person solutions that are not only going to help you deal better with, for example, the herniation, but it's also going to help you move better and understand your body better and gain a whole bunch of knowledge so that you're not going to develop all kinds of other things in your back. It's just sort of like acquiring compounded diagnoses from continued bad habits. And, you know, one of the big problems, Sabir, is lack of information. We just don't have enough information to be educated consumers. So that's a huge part of the work that I'm doing is educating and changing people's perspective on how we approach back pain. And if you go to a physio, most physios, you know, their practices are set. I love physical therapy and I refer out to physical therapists here in New York quite a bit, but it is mostly mechanistic for many practices. And it's an if you have a herniation, then we'll do these exercises. And it's mostly exercise based. And what's missing is posture and breathing and stress relief and inflammation management and ongoing education and ongoing support. You know, once your insurance pays for your 14 visits and you can't come to physical therapy anymore, you're on your own. You're going to go back to doing CrossFit or playing tennis or doing the things that you do, and you've been cut off from the only help that you maybe were getting was from your physical therapist. When insurance doesn't pay for that anymore, that help goes away, and you're sort of like maybe not anymore educated, and maybe you weren't doing the activities you want to return to in physical therapy. You were just doing the physical therapy exercises. So, in that respect, a lot of people aren't thinking about their back pain like, oh, those 3 pints I'm going to have at the pub and that lamb roast on Sunday, with French fries, like they're not thinking that may have an effect on their pain or how long it sticks around or their experience of pain. But in as few words as possible, because I know that was kind of long-winded, pain responds to everything. It responds to stress in your life. It responds to sympathetic tone, right? So if you have a ton of cortisol and you're always in fight or flight, you'll be experiencing more pain more frequently, and it'll stick around a lot longer. And similarly, nutrition has the same effect in that nutrition can either be excitatory or it can be calming and healing. So it can your nutrition is either going to exacerbate inflammation and impede your immune system's ability to heal your body, or your nutrition is going to be able to help those systems work to help you heal and to help you reduce inflammation and reduce pain and manage stress and rest, relaxation, good nutrition, good exercise, good mental hygiene also is also important. So yeah, there's a ton of things we can do nutrition wise. And yeah, fruits and vegetables are definitely very helpful for reducing inflammation and speeding your immune system's natural abilities to heal. But you also need a decent amount of protein. Protein is really sort of like it's like the omnibus that helps your body. It helps your systems be able to move inflammatory proteins through your lymphatic system and get rid of some of the bad stuff. And you also need protein to heal muscles and to heal soft tissues.
Right.
So fruits and vegetables are important because most of my client base is women. Majority of the women I'm working with are not eating enough protein, and that's just gonna harm your healing trajectory. And then the other big thing that I can offer your viewers, like if you're like, oh, well, what do I do? What's something I can do right now that's going to help me? Sugar.
Right.
Sugar, 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 sugar. Sugar is probably the worst thing that you are maybe eating. Maybe it's not sugar, maybe it's if you're eating a lot of carbs, those are turning to sugar. Or if you're drinking a lot of alcohol, that's also turning to sugar. And that's one thing I think we can all, myself included, we can all do a better job of consuming less sugar.
Yeah.
And that'll actually st not only back pain, but that'll actually slow the whole aging process in your body, essentially.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. And as you were speaking, I had flashbacks from a few years ago, because I experienced a bit of back pain myself. I believe it was in 2015. So at the beginning of that year, I started going to the gym and working out. And it was the first time that I had properly started lifting weights in my life. And as most people do in the gym, and as I did, the stronger you feel, the more inclined you are to increase the weights that you're lifting. And as I started doing that, I found in my kind of fourth or fifth month, I started experiencing severe back pain after workouts, to the extent where even if I was standing up in the kitchen, for example, washing the dishes, I had to stop after 2 or 3 minutes because the pain in my top area of my back was so excruciating that I just had to stop and sit down and take a rest. And I ignored it for the first few weeks, thinking it would just go away, but it actually got worse and worse, to the point where I had to go to the doctor, who then referred me to my physio. And while the physio's exercises were okay, I remember he never really went in depth as you have today when describing the ins and outs of back pains and possible remedies. So my next question is a slightly selfish one. Right now, I'm still going to the gym, but I'm very reluctant to increase the weights that I'm lifting in the gym. I'm still lifting weights, but I'm not doing so to the extent of what I did back in 2015, because I always have in the back of my mind, I don't want to experience the pain that I did because it was so excruciating. If you had a client with a similar experience to myself, what would be your advice to them in terms of still maintaining exercise, but being cautious about how far they push themselves in the gym, for example?
This is such a great question. I'm so glad. I know there's going to be like thousands of people who watch this video who are like, oh, me too, me too. So I'm really glad you brought it up. My first question would be, do you know what you were doing, which lifts you were doing in the gym that contributed to that condition, if you had to suspect one or two?
I think it was probably the back exercises and maybe some of the shoulder ones. Certainly the ones, and I'm not very good with the names of exercises. I just know how they carried out. So if this makes sense, so imagine you're at the gym and you've got the bench, you've got one knee on the bench, kind of looking down this way. I don't know how well I'm explaining this. Apologies. And then you've got the weight in your right hand, which you lift from the bottom up like this. And
Row.
I was doing this on either side. So that was one of the exercises. The other one was a shoulder exercise where I'd be sitting down, and they're just doing the shoulder press. But I think I pushed myself too much in terms of the weight. And I think back now, I was lifting ridiculously stupid weights, even for the shoulders, to the point actually where on one of the workout days, I actually felt something kind of pop around this area. And that was a sign for me that I was going too hard. And the other back exercises were just, for example, the lat pull down. But again, I think just going a bit too heavy. And I do actually think, and I may be wrong, you could perhaps correct me, but I do feel that there are certain body types that can only really lift up to a certain weight, because we're all built differently. But myself, like probably many other people in the gym, we always think that the stronger we get, the more we can lift, and there's kind of no limit. But I think there always comes a point, perhaps, where the body can only take so much. But yeah, I mean, just coming back to the examples that I gave, does that make sense?
Yeah, so a couple of thoughts on the subject matter. One, it sounds like it was more of a shoulder, upper back shoulder issue than sort of lower back area.
Yeah, it was definitely upper back.
Yeah, so a couple of things. In broad brush strokes, when you go to the gym, the number one mistake I think most people make is increasing their weight too quickly. And so it's your muscles respond really well to, especially if you haven't been working out a ton or you're just restarting. I like to advise building up endurance and repetitions at a steady weight for a while before increasing your weight. Or if you're going to increase your weight, you're just going to do like a 1 to 3 weight max. You're not going to do like 8 or 10 at a higher weight. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's good to sort of warm up. And then if you're trying to build hypertrophy or muscle mass, once you're appropriately warmed up for that body part, it's okay usually. Like let's say you're doing a chest press. You would do some shoulder mobility work, some upper back mobility work, and then you do some chest presses at a pretty low, really easy weight. And then after you're kind of warmed up, you can pick up like, oh, I bet I can do, like 85 pounds on these dumbbells. And you can try for like a 1 or 2 max just to see like how much can I do. And then you can gauge, if you can only do 1 or 2, you're pretty close to your max rep. And then you want to take that down to about 80% of whatever that was. And your appropriate weight for 8 to 10 repetitions would be 80% of your one max reps, or even if you know, like I can probably do 200 pounds, but I'm just gonna do like 160 or 180 for a while. That's a
Right.
better way to go about it, actually. And one of the things I do with my clients is, especially if they're in the gym, is I'll have them videotape themselves with their gym workout, and we'll go over the whole thing. And easy things like the bent over row, most people are doing a bent over row with form that is really, it's just not necessary stress on their back. There's other ways to do rows that aren't quite as stressful as the normal setups for the back, for example. So I do advise people on how to do certain lifts. People who like to do deadlifts, I'll often suggest, for example, putting a couple of plates under the barbell, or putting not going all the way to the floor, essentially. So bringing the floor up about 6 or 8 inches, so that you're not bending all the way to the floor for your first couple of weeks or months of deadlifting is actually a little easier on the back. Using a trap bar for deadlifting is easier on the back. You mentioned washing dishes was difficult for you. So this is a great example of some of the kooky advice I give my clients that's like life-changing, is that I'll have my clients, because the problem with washing dishes is, A, we tend to hook our hips on the sinks. We tend to sort of push our hips forward when we're washing dishes, and then we're sort of leaning back. That's the first problem. The second problem is, if you're past 5'5", if you're taller than me, for example, and my husband is 6'2", right? He's like a full foot taller than me almost. And sinks are so low. The countertop is already low, and then the sink is like another 12 inches lower. So to do dishes, you're in this ridiculous position. And what I suggest to some of my clients is to buy a long-handled, you can buy a brand new toilet bowl brush.
Right.
The handles are this long. Once you have a long-handled brush, you no longer have to lean down to get into your sink. And that's one of the things that helps my clients with sort of doing sink stuff.
Right.
And then there's a bunch of other things in the gym that are really helpful, but I think most people try and hit too much weight. There's a couple of gym exercises that I categorically say absolutely not in terms of spine hygiene. One of them is the Jefferson curl, and that's the one where you would stand on a box and then
Right.
you curl with a weight, pad your
Yes.
feet, move forward, bend, and curl back up. No, it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
It's people that say that is safe for you and they justify why they're doing it really don't understand the ligamentous difference on the back and front of the spine and how that puts your spine at risk.
Interesting.
Another one that I also don't agree on is a lot of people do reverse hypers incorrectly. And that's the one where there's like a cushion and your hips are on the cushion, your feet are down here, and your back is bending and you're coming up like this. So sort of a back bend over a cushion horse. And most people are not, the cushion's not in the right place. And most people are coming up way too much. So that one's really not super helpful. You know what I do love? You know what I love for the back that most people aren't doing, and most PTs aren't prescribing? Hanging.
Interesting.
It doesn't even have to be full body weight. But just, even if you've got a bar or you go to a playground and you've got the monkey bars and you reach your arms up and you just drop your knees a little bit, so you're creating a little bit of traction from the shoulders through the spine to your hips. Hanging, it's amazing for the spine.
Well, that's really interesting. And as you were speaking, I was just thinking of how underappreciative we are of our backs. And often we, certainly for me, I take my back for granted, right? You get up in the morning, you do your day to day. Oh, the back would always be fine. I can walk, I can do this, I can do that. But the moment something goes wrong, that's when it can really be debilitating. And yeah, I think you've just inspired me as well, to be a lot more conscious and careful of care with my back. And there are certainly a lot of things that I can do to improve, as we were speaking earlier, to get a better spine hygiene. Yeah, just improving my day to day, really, in terms of, like we said earlier, where I'm sitting, my day to day movement. So no, I really appreciate everything that you've shared today. Before we end, I had one very last question, if you don't mind. I just wanted to quickly touch on joys of day to day living, because you've seen firsthand how back pain can often come in the way of this with the clients that you work with. From your experience, are there any suggestions that you can share in this regard of how we can start living with more joy if we're going through things like back pain?
Oh my goodness, I love this question so much. We completely lose our joy when we're in pain. I mean, joy just goes right down the drain, when we're consumed with how we're moving every minute of every day and becoming more isolated because we're doing less things and we get kind of angry and our personality changes in a big, big, big way. And it's not only hard for us as the patients, but it's hard for everyone around us. It's hard for your kids and your coworkers and your partner. So yeah, joy, I call it the joy muscle. Joy is actually a part of the retrain back pain practice. And one of the first things I teach my clients is to stop focusing on all the things you can't do. Like, I can't run anymore. I can't go snowboarding. I can't roller ski. Focusing on the things you can't do is not really helpful for your mind or your energy or anything really. So I really encourage people to focus on all the things you can do. If you went for a walk to the mailbox and back and didn't have pain, let's celebrate that. If you were able to get on your bike and ride around the block, but you haven't been on your bike in 6 months, that's a big win. So I'm all about celebrating the wins. And, I say that joy is a muscle and it has to be trained. And just a little personal story, if I may.
Of course.
Part of my story is that my parents both had long illnesses, and they ultimately succumbed to their illnesses. So it was a very long 20 years of sort of caring for my parents and watching them suffer. And in that time period, I became a bit guilty about joy. Like, I didn't really feel like there was people I loved were suffering, and I didn't feel like I had a right to be joyful. And over 20 years, I mean, if you're like not practicing joy for 20 years, or when it shows up, you like shoo it away because you feel guilty. It's sort of like survivor guilt, you lose the ability to attract joy, to experience joy, to cultivate it, to stay with it, and to really feel it. And so it's a practice. And I challenge anyone who's watching to find something today that sparks joy. It could just be the sun streaming in your window. It could be the sound of kids playing on a playground. But find a thing that sparks joy and stick with it. Hold on to it. See how long you can experience that sensory, auditory feeling of joy and really just internalize it and bathe in it for as long as you possibly can. And notice if your mind wants you to like move it away and shove it away and move on. Because that's all sort of symptomatic of being joy averse. So that's a really beautiful question, Sabir. I'm so glad you asked that, and I hope that response was appropriate and challenging and a fun exercise for us all to do today.
No, absolutely. And thank you for that beautiful answer. It was a fabulous way to end the show. And Danine, I really appreciate your time. I know you lead a busy life helping many people with their back pain issues. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for taking the time today. I really enjoyed this conversation.
I really enjoyed it as well. Thanks so much, Sabir.
No worries at all. For everybody who's watching and listening, just a quick reminder of how to spell Deneen's name if you want to search for her online. It's DINNEEN and the surname VIGGIANO. That's Deneen Vigiano. You can find her on Instagram using the handle at retrainbackpain and the website again, which is retrainbackpain.com. I will, of course, also include all of Deneen Vigiano's other social media links in both the YouTube and audio podcast episode descriptions, which will also include a free short video workshop, which provides you with guidance on what to do if you are experiencing back pain flare up. That's been created by Deneen Vigiano, our guest today. So please do go check that out and all the other links in the description on the show notes. Thank you so much for tuning in to this special episode of the Sabir Bharti Show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I have. Until next time, do take care of yourself. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.